It's time for Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the show focusing on fishing, hunting, outdoor recreation, destinations, and conservation in the region where you live and play. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lure Company, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Wallowa County. And now, let's see what's going on in the field and on the water with your host, John Cruz.
When it comes to the outdoors in late April, it'd be fair to say there is so very much to do in so little time. Turkey hunting season is open in much of the Northwest, and if Facebook photos are any indication, the season is going very well. Spring bear hunting is open too in several states, and if you're an angler, especially in Washington State, there's a good chance you're heading to one of the lowland lakes opening up this weekend for trout. Bass, walleye, catfish, and kokanee, they're all biting too, and even if you don't hunt or fish, I'm hoping you got outside last week during that run of beautiful spring weather we had for a hike, maybe to bike, or maybe to dip your toes in the water as whitewater rafting season begins for outfitters around the Northwest. You've got to love April. If only there were more days off to do all of these things, right? This week on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we've got a lot, as always, coming your way. We're going to start off with one last piece of audio recorded at the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show in Portland, and it's worth the wait because it's a conversation with longtime Portland area fishing guide Jack Glass about crankbaits for smallmouth bass. Jack will tell you about some of his favorite lures for smallies, and I'll tell you about some of mine. Josh Hopkins with Striker Rods in Eugene is back for another Max Minute to tell you about some of his favorite kokanee fishing destinations in Oregon and how he gets those landlocked sockeye salmon to bite. And then we'll head to Idaho, where James Brower with the Department of Fish and Game will let you know how to hunt for shed antlers from deer and elk this spring in a responsible way that protects the animals, our roads, and private property. Our last conversation today will be with Wyoming Tournament walleye angler Pat Slater. He'll tell you about some of the best destinations to fish for walleye and sauger this spring in the Cowboy State, and also let you know how he goes about catching these fish, some information that ought to come in handy no matter where you're looking to hook into a walleye. On top of this, we've got news about a new catch-and-release record fish in Idaho and an early opening on a portion of the Columbia River for the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery Program, as well as our ever-popular Sportsman's Warehouse Trivia Question of the Week. Put it all together, and we've got a lot of the outdoors coming your way. So, let's get it started, like we do every week, with another edition of Sportsman Spotlight with David Sparks, the program that is brought to you every week by the Ag Information Network of the West.
Should wolves be used to help control chronic wasting disease? David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight. I talked with retired professor of veterinary medicine at Texas A&M University, Dr. Don Davis.
4 per 1,000 in wild deer across the United States. There's a little more CWD test positives in deer than there is in elk. There's very few moose. There's only been like 3 or 4 moose in the whole wide world. Diagnosed with CWD, they were test positive.
Since 1995, when they were first introduced into Yellowstone National Park, wolves have been a topic of controversy among sportsmen as well as the non-hunting public. The gray wolf is an apex predator that primarily feeds on deer, elk, moose, and other ungulates, and they can positively influence the balance of these prey species with their habitat. Recently, some scientists have speculated using wolves to help control the spread of chronic wasting disease, but is that realistic? No, says Kip Adams, who has almost 20 years of experience working with CWD and is currently the chief conservation officer for the National Deer Alliance. He says wolves are great predators where they live. They certainly can take out the weaker and sicker animals, so in those areas they may help limit the spread of CWD a little bit, but that is not going to solve our CWD problems. Even in areas where wolves live, hunters and state agencies are the only ones that will be able to do that. Hope you enjoyed Sportsman Spotlight. I'm David Sparks. See you next time.
Wheat growers, worried about pest damage to your fields this year? Syngenta's 5-way combination seed treatment provides proven protection against a broad range of seedling diseases and pests. Cruiser Insecticide offers below and above ground pest control of wireworms, hessian fly, aphids, along with the Cruiser Vigor Effect and Vibrance fungicide rooting power. And for the enhanced control of fusarium, wheat growers can now turn to Syngenta Seed Care's latest innovation, Trebuchet Fungicide. Powered by Adepidin technology, Trebuchet is another powerful line of defense against this tough-to-control disease. Syngenta seed treatments encourage plants to develop stronger root systems for improved performance and higher yields. Syngenta understands the current economics and challenges of getting a stand of wheat this spring. As a result, Syngenta is offering to share the risk in having to replant in the first 45 days. To learn more, contact your local seed supplier. Always read and follow label instructions.
Come to Oregon's Wallowa County for outdoors adventure. Hike, ride, paddle, fish, or sightsee to your heart's content. And then visit one of our wonderful towns, whether it be Joseph with its beautiful bronze statues, our county seat in Enterprise, or one of our charming small towns like Wallowa, Imnaha, or Troy, where you can eat, shop, and sleep before continuing your adventure the next day. Plan your visit now at WallowaCountyChamber.com. That's WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Hunting is conservation. At the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, we salute hunters for providing the majority of conservation funding across the U.S. Join us for our annual fundraising banquet to benefit wildlife and the mission of the RMEF.
I'm gonna take you fishing, honey. You're gonna love it. Gonna get up before the sun rises above us.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We are bringing you audio from the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show, and I'm lucky enough to be talking to one of the best-known anglers in the Pacific Northwest. His name is Jack Glass. He's the owner of Team Hookup Fishing. He's been guiding clients on the Columbia, Willamette River, and other rivers as well for a long, long time. Jack, great to have you back on the air.
John, thank you very much. Glad that you were here, and we're at the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show. This is like 43 years in running on this show, and it's happening, folks. It is happening, and it's a pretty nice turnout here. I'm impressed. It's a little better, I think, what some people thought. There are waves of people coming by, but there's a lot of stuff to see, and there's several things you're only going to see it here at this show.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. Now, usually when I have you on the air, we're talking salmon fishing. Today, though, we're going to talk about a seminar that you've been giving at the show, Crankbaits for Smallmouth Bass in the Columbia River. I honestly think smallmouth bass, especially in the mid-Columbia, below Umatilla and Boardman, one of the most underrated fisheries and one of the best fisheries we have.
Right. Smallmouth bass, and there's largemouth around as well, too, but you will catch smallmouth. But what a great fishery. You know, it's 7 days a week. You know what the limit is. There is none.
Right.
And it's you can go at it anytime you want. It's great fun for kids and family-type fishing. It's something that everyone can enjoy.
Well, I've enjoyed smallmouth bass fishing in the Columbia, especially in the Gorge, for a long time now. But, you know, it used to be, and I think it still is to a big extent, people go out to the Gorge to fish, and they do one of two things. They're either throwing tube baits, or they're drop-shotting Senkos or something like that. But you're advocating crankbaits. Tell me more.
Well, one thing I like to use them is to look for the fish. You know, we've got electronics and all that kind of stuff too, but it's kind of nice to start throwing around, looking, and see if you can locate them. Because the real aggressive ones are going to bite it right away. And if you change your colors up, you know, I usually start, especially in the springtime, you always want to start with something chartreuse in the morning. And then there's different types, some that dive shallow and some dive deeper. And that helps you locate some fish. So once you locate, you caught a few of them, it's like the easy ones will bite right away and then they won't hit it again.
Right.
So then you come back with your drop shots or your sluggos or something, a slow presentation. But it helps you locate them. Great fun, and I talked to you too, John. You control them. What a way to fish with your kids. Get them out there and throw the rods out, have them cast for a little while, and then eat sandwiches and troll them around. And it's good action, you know. We got to introduce our young people to our resource and continue our fishing going for years to come.
Well, not only that, if you start trolling crankbaits for smallmouth, pretty good chance you're going to run into some walleye too.
That's exactly right. And those doggone steelhead and salmon bite it too.
Funny how crankbaits work. Let's talk a little bit more about some of your favorite colors. Chartreuse for that high muddy water. What's your go-to color on the Columbia and why?
Well, probably anything that's crawfish imitation. because they do eat a lot of crawfish, you know that. And they also eat a lot of the bullheads too. So you can use a more darker brown pattern. You can do that, absolutely. But anything with a crawfish color is good. Metallic reds, that kind of sort of thing, I like that.
Let's talk a little bit about the type of crankbaits you like to use. Now, when I always think of searching for smallmouth, especially along the riprap that we see on so much of the Columbia, I'm a huge fan of a rattle trap, or my latest lure that I love is the Berkeley War Pig, which is also a lipless crankbait. What do you like to use?
You know, for years I used the Bill Lewis rattle traps. You know, I mean, that thing is heavy. You can pitch it out there a long ways. It sinks down. It runs deep. It runs shallow, however you want to fish it. It makes a lot of noise. Gosh, and it looks like it's all different colors. Of course, you can get a crawfish color, but in the early days, I used to use anything that was silver and a black back or a blue back because it looks like a fish, you know, some sort, and they're aggressive about grabbing that. So I do like those. That was the early ones. Some of the newer plugs, I'm not as in tune with them because I haven't fished them as much, but I have fished bass out there for well over 30 years. I've been guiding 38 for Pete's sake, so it's probably been 40 years I've been fishing bass, I'm sure. But it's not my main go-to thing. It's more of a filler for me. I take my grandkids to go bass fishing. Cripes, and sometimes we're going to sit and eat sandwiches or something. I'll troll the plugs for them, and then we can pick them up that way just so they can reel them in and have fun with them. So,
when you're trolling crankbaits, now, I know this is dependent based on the time of year. Is there kind of a go-to depth that you're working? Are we talking like that 10 to 20-foot zone maybe?
As far as the plug I prefer to dive is something around 6 or 8 feet. And so I will hone in on areas maybe 12 feet deep at the most so that that plug is within that range. Yes, you can certainly, when I fish walleye, I use great big crankbaits. It'll run 18, 20 feet deep. And you do catch bass on those things down there running real deep, especially more in the summertime because the big ones will move down a little bit deeper and smaller ones. So probably something that's going to dive about 8 feet probably the most, and I'm going to fish 8 to 12 feet of water.
What's your favorite crankbait for smallmouth on the Columbia and why?
My favorite crankbait, anything that looks like a crawfish. You know, I do like the Lure Jensen Hot Lips. Those work really, really well. I like the one that's about 3 inches long. It's got a life-size bill on it. It dives that 6-8 foot range really well. You can cast it. You control it. It's a very stable bill lure. It runs true all the time. It isn't real finicky as far as keeping fishing. I like those. Probably my go-to in a crawfish or certainly in the springtime, anything is chartreuse.
You know, it's funny, I'm looking at this Lure Jensen Hot Lips, and it reminds me of my favorite lure for smallmouth, especially in the fall, and that would be the Timber Tiger.
Timber Tiger!
From Yakima Bait. Looks very similar, and I see that, yep, you've got some of those too, don't you?
There we go. They're a shallow diver, and you can throw them. Well, here's one right there, is Timber Tiger. Remember, they put these little deals on it, on the sides, just so they'd kick off the brush. That was the whole intent of that thing that they had told me, the designer at Lure Jensen, so it wouldn't hang up onto the brush. You would run through the logs and stuff. So Timber Tiger, that's a good one. But he's a shallow runner. He's only 3 or 4 feet.
Right.
It's about all you're going to get out of it. So there's a couple of them with bigger bills on them, but most of them are smaller bill on them.
Right. And it's funny because I actually do run the bigger bill ones that go down about that 9-10 foot level.
Okay.
So
Right. Bottom
line is this, folks, crankbaits, they work on the Columbia River. They work on just about any other waterway too. Whether you're fishing reservoirs, whether you're fishing other rivers like the Snake River, go to your crankbaits, use them to find the fish. And you know what? The fishing might be so good, you might not even have to change to finesse fishing. If people want to go fishing with you, whether it be for bass or your go-to salmon, how can they get a hold of you, Jack?
Well, they can call me is the best thing. You know, I'm old school, so I do have an answering machine. I do answer texts. Facebook, any of that too. But 503-260-2315. Leave a message or text. That works best.
That's Jack Glass with Team Hookup Guide Service. The number again, 503-260-2315. That's 503-260-2315. Long-time, well-known guide offering great trips on the Columbia River and the Willamette River as well. Jack, thanks for sharing these great tips for smallmouth bass fishing with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Yes, John. Thanks so much for coming over and interview. And we're catching spring salmon right now. Right now. My son's got two this morning. So keep us in mind on the spring salmon thing.
Absolutely. And folks, if you want to get in the spring salmon, it's a tough year to do it by yourself. This is definitely the year to get a guide. And Brandon Glass and Jack Glass, they can hook you up. Thanks again, Jack.
Absolutely, John. Thank you.
Staying on the Columbia River, we've got news from the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery Program. As you'll recall, we talked to Eric Winther with that program last week, and it opens up May 1st on the Columbia and portions of the Snake River, but they've got an early opening. A portion of the river from McNary Dam up past the mouth of the Yakima River is open now for early pike minnow fishing, and this is a great time to go because these fish tend to stack up around the mouth of the Yakima River this time of year. So if you want a chance to earn some money by catching some pike minnow and turning them in to the Richland Station, and you can find out exactly where that is by going to pikeminnow.org, now's your chance to do so. Get that fishing rod, get yourself some bait, whether it be night crawlers or chicken gizzards, and head out to the Columbia and the mouth of the Yakima, do a little bit of fishing, and make a little money. The website to find out more again is pikeminnow.org. Leaky boat, it ain't much, but if you bail, it'll float. I'm gonna take you fishing,
honey. You're gonna love it. Go fishing. Help salmon and make money. You can do it through September 30th by catching northern pike minnow and turning them in for cash. Here's how it works. First, register at a designated station on the Columbia or Snake River. Then, go fishing. At the end of the day, turn in any pike minnow you catch 9 inches or longer and look for the ones with tags worth $500. You'll get vouchers for those pike minnow you turn in, and you mail those in for cash. Find out more at pikeminnow.org.
With more of the great outdoors on Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
It's that time again. It's time for another extended Max Minute brought to you every week by Max Lure Company. With us again, Josh Hopkins. He is the man behind Striker Rods out of Eugene, Oregon. Also a Max Lure Pro Staffer and a Kokanee fishing junkie. Great to have you on the air again, Josh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Josh, let's talk a little bit about where you like to go Kokanee fishing and your standard setup when you do.
Well, I'm a man from the Willamette Valley, so I target the high Cascade Lakes. I've been fishing Odell Lake, Wikiup, Crescent. I've managed to get over to Wallowa and made a few pilgrimages to the Mecca of Flaming Gorge over the years.
And when you go to any of these lakes, what's your go-to setup?
Well, the go-to setup is also season-dependent. Odell Lake specifically is a jigging lake early in the season, and then later on, when the thermocline develops, it becomes a trolling show. So I'll target the fish early on with the Max products. I'll be using sonic baked fish, casting to jumpers, and targeting those fast, shallow-moving schools of fish. And then later on, I'll switch over to a sling blade or a double D, and with smile blades or coconuts. And I'll let the fish tell me what color they want, but for the most part, that is the product that puts the fish in the boat.
I always thought there was only one color to use, and it was always pink.
That's always a standard. Usually start the day, give them a variety of choices. The fish will tell you what they want. It might turn out to be a chartreuse day, could be an orange day, but pink is always a solid performer.
All right. Well, there you go. Some ideas on where to fish in Oregon for kokanee this year, and also some ideas on how to go about catching them. Some different things than what you normally hear on the show. And if you want to find out about Josh's company at Striker Rods, just go to his website, Striker, S-T-R-Y-K-E-R, rods.us. That's strikerrods.us. Or drop by his shop in Eugene, talk a little kokanee fishing with him. He'll give you some more advice. Thanks, Josh.
Wedding rings? I've had as many as I've got fingers on my hands. I started off with the wedding ring classic, of course. That smooth blade from Indiana. That beaded body. The sharp hook. We caught a lot of trout together over the years, but then that patented smile blade wedding ring, well, let's just say it took my fancy, along with the trout and the kokanee. Now I'm going through this new age sort of phase. You might say I'm hooked on the new high UV colored wedding rings, and I'm catching more fish than ever. So yeah, I've got a whole bunch of wedding rings. You should get some too. Don't look at the jewelry store though. These wedding ring spinners are from Max Lure, and you'll find them at the sporting goods store near you or online at maxlure.com.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has what you need as a hunter, angler, hiker, paddler, camper, and outdoors enthusiast. They also carry an extensive assortment of firearms and ammunition you simply can't find anymore at many big box stores. On top of that, their knowledgeable staff is here to help you purchase the right gear so you can get the most out of your outdoor experience. Visit your local Sportsman's Warehouse store today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We've got James Brower on the line. He's with the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, and we're going to be talking about responsible shed antler hunting. Yes, there are ways to do this where you can actually harm the big game animals that you're hoping to get those shed antlers from. James, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, John. Appreciate being here.
James, shed antler hunting has become very popular throughout the western U.S. in the recent years, but some people are doing it in a way that's actually harming our big game herds, whether they be deer herds or elk herds. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about some of the problems that shed antler hunters are causing?
Yeah, there's definitely been an increase over the years of people that want to go out and about and hunt for sheds, which is not a bad thing. I mean, it's a fun thing to do, and it's really exciting when you find a deer shed or an elk. But one of the problems that we face is that people are, because it's becoming more popular, they're trying to go out earlier and earlier, and also go into places where they shouldn't be. So there are some areas around the state that are closed to human entry. Or they have motor vehicle restrictions on locations, and those boundaries just seem to be getting pushed more and more, which definitely stresses out those animals when they're trying to make it through some of the hardest part of the year for them is right now. So the earlier people go, the more they push animals off their winter range where they're trying to, eke out a living, and just really puts a lot of stress on those animals.
Mike Demick with your agency wrote a great article about this topic, and I just want to hit some of the high points. One of the things he says you ought to do is delay your search for shed antlers. Why don't you talk more about that?
Yeah, so just giving those animals a little bit of a break and just maybe trying to wait it out just a little bit. I know we all are getting anxious, especially in Idaho. Sometimes we get these good weather windows early on, kind of the fake spring, so to speak. And man, I know if you're like me anyway, you just want to get outside and do something. And sometimes, shed hunting is what people want to do. But the earlier you go, the more chance you have of putting stress on a deer or an elk when they're on their winter range. So if you can just kind of hold off a little bit, we can still get some pretty big winter storms. Even in March, we've had a few pretty snowy days over here in eastern Idaho anyway. So anything we can do to just give those animals a break by delaying our search by a few weeks or days will help out.
Another thing that Mike suggests in his article is to watch these animals, these deer and elk, from a distance.
Yeah, so we have really good optics nowadays. Even for cheap, you can buy binoculars that'll really give you a good scope of the landscape. So if you know where animals are and they're out there, just do your best to not get too close to them. If they're running away and sensing you and being nervous, that's kind of too close. So watch from a distance. I know a lot of shed hunters that'll go out and glass hillside, so they're quite a ways away from critters, and they'll even see animals drop their antlers and just kind of mark the location and go back on a later date when the animals are, a little further away and they can do so without disturbing them.
We should probably talk about exactly the state of deer and elk as they come out of winter and they're coming into spring. So, the grass hasn't really grown yet. A lot of the forage base isn't there. I mean, these animals, they're right on the margin, some of them, between life and death, aren't they?
They are. So, there's kind of a misconception out there that a lot of the animals will die, during the throes of winter, which is not the case in general. So we see our largest die-offs, especially of fawns, in March and even into April. And we monitor that all the way up until the end of May. So they're still susceptible during that time to any kind of stress and pressure. Their immune systems are down. The grass is not greened up quite yet. And even when the grass does get green, the way they process their food, they have to cultivate a gut bacteria And it takes them several weeks to have that change over from their winter dietary needs to their spring dietary needs and to cultivate the appropriate gut bacteria to do that. So even if there is some green food on the ground and we think, oh, hey, they got enough to eat, they may not be able to process that just yet. And so we do get animals that will starve even after, you know, the grass is green.
Wow. That is a fascinating little factoid in terms of deer and elk biology I never knew before. Moving on to the next thing in Mike Demick's article here. And folks, you can read this article at the Idaho Department of Fish and Game website. Just go to the news releases, press releases tab, and you'll find it there. It's really worth the read. Respect private lands, obey road restrictions. This gets more into just the screwing up the roads, for lack of a better term, when they're muddy, and, you know, respecting private landowners' property.
Oh, absolutely. One of my biggest pet peeves, the thing that just bothers me every single year is, you know, over here in eastern Idaho, we have a lot of really volcanic soils, and it gets pretty muddy, especially in the spring after the rains. And it doesn't even take much rain before those roads are pretty unusable. And even after some of those roads are open, if the conditions are not right, if you're out there, you know, some of these folks in these large, you know, big four-wheel drive vehicles that a lot of people have, they will just muck up that road. And then for the entire year, you got these huge ruts that kind of make it pretty restrictive for other people that may not have that high of clearance on their vehicle. And they just make it really difficult for others out there. And it costs, you know, road agencies a lot of money to flatten those roads back out. So using a little bit of caution there is always a welcome thing. And, you know, respecting private property, the more people that are out there every year getting into this sport and other things in the outdoors, it's good to see. I mean, we love that people are wanting to be outdoors and participate in those activities. But an important part of preserving that is making sure that we are abiding by the rules, so to speak. And there's a lot of places historically, even when I was growing up, that were private property owners allowed access to their property for hunting, fishing, and recreation of all types. But it's getting a little more locked down, and that's because of bad experiences that landowners have had with people trespassing or vandalizing and just being where they shouldn't be. So it's your responsibility as a responsible recreationist to know where you go. And there's a lot of really good apps and things you can buy on your phone that provide you some really detailed information. And it's, if you have those, it's kind of easier than ever to know exactly where you are and where you can be and where you shouldn't be.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Onyx is one of those apps, folks. It's just a lifesaver when it comes to that. And, you know, I know Idaho and your neighboring state, Wyoming, they have some very, and Montana for that matter too, they've got some programs where they work really hard to work with landowners and try to get access for hunters and anglers. And I can imagine there's probably been several times where shed hunters trespassing on those lands have screwed it up, and basically the landowners are saying, no, I'm not going to allow this to happen. Look what happened this winter, this spring. This is a real issue, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So we have a great program in Idaho. Ours is called Access Yes, and it's a fish and game program where we do negotiate with landowners to provide access to sportsmen and women for hunting and fishing and shed hunting and all sorts of things. But there are, you know, they don't get a lot of money from that. We don't have a lot of money to pay them. It's a lot of it is done out of the kindness and goodness of their own heart. And, you know, I think they get paid sometimes like a dollar and a quarter an acre. Like, it's not very much money that they're making from this program. But there have been people that have unenrolled their property because they had it in the Access Yes, it was published, and then they got a lot of folks there that just trashed the place, threw garbage around, cut fences, just went where they weren't supposed to go, and yeah, ruined it for the rest of us. So definitely it's helpful to you and others around you to just abide by those rules, regulations, and keep those relationships with landowners good. Some of the best hunting and fishing in Idaho is on private property.
Yes, it is, and not just in Idaho, other states too, and I just shake my head at people that take that access for granted. One last thing we need to talk about. We got about a minute left here, and we need to talk about your dogs. I've got my Springer Spaniel at my feet right now, but I wouldn't dare let my dog go off a leash while I was shed hunting because she'd be chasing deer all day long.
We all think we have the best behaved dog, right? But the reality is it's just sometimes too tempting for our animals to chase critters out in the field. So even just not having your dog with you is definitely a good idea. And if you do want to take your dog with you, as most people do, just keep them leashed up so that when you do come across a random moose or a deer, that they're not tempted to run and chase after them, which is also in Idaho, that is illegal. And most places, especially on Forest Service land, do require your dog to be on a leash.
Okay, there's some great advice for all of you who want to do some spring shed hunting. Again, do it in a way where you're not harming the animals that we love. Do it in a way where you're respecting private property and also roads that are closed, and they're closed for a reason. But get out there and have fun. Shed hunting is a lot of fun, and it's something you ought to do this spring. James, thanks for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
I'm gonna jig me up a walleye from the bottom of the lake. And I'm not gonna tell you what I use for bait. I'm a jigger. I'm the best jigger around.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We've got Pat Slater on the line. He is a Max Lure Pro staffer. He's also a tournament angler who calls Wyoming home, and he loves to fish for walleye. Pat, it's great to have you on the air.
Hey, John, it's great to be with you today. It's a little snowy right now in my hometown, but always thinking about fishing for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And you know that snow's going to melt even in Wyoming sooner than later, and you're going to be out there catching some walleye in no time. Now, you've already been out. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, you were out in the Bighorn River. How did that fishing trip go?
Well, John, it was great. We had a really nice day. Went out with some friends and just doing some bank fishing, which is nice for the people that don't have the boats or have that luxury. We had some access, public access to the Bighorn River, and we were casting plastics from the shore. And I think overall we ended up landing about 8 sauger. The nicest was 21 inches. It was a great day.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. Most people, when they think about walleye, when they think about sauger, they always think they have to have a boat. They think they have to troll like a spinner worm harness, something like that. It's nice to hear you can catch these fish from the bank if you don't have a boat. What kind of plastics were you using?
We were using curly tails. Some refer to those as fisher tails, and then also swim baits, paddle tail baits, and about 2.5 to 3.5 inches long, and quarter-ounce jig head seemed to work pretty well, casting out in the current and just working along the bottom.
Nice, nice. Simple, but effective. You gotta love that. Let's talk about some of the fisheries that people might want to focus on this spring in Wyoming. And I was at the Wyoming Walleye Stampede website. And folks, this is a tournament series in Wyoming for walleye fishing. They're going to be at Glendo Reservoir twice this year. That's out in eastern Wyoming. Must be a pretty good fishery if they're going two times. How does this reservoir fish in the spring?
Well, it fishes pretty well as the water comes up and warms up. That's really the key. They tend to migrate up the North Platte to spawn, and as they filter back into the reservoir, you know, it's cool or cold water fishing. That temperature is really the key, and it gets in around that 50-degree mark. Things start to heat up, and you can have success trolling crankbaits, pulling bottom bouncers, and also pitching plastics if you can find some rock structure that will tend to concentrate the fish.
When it comes to the bottom bouncer method, I'm assuming we're talking about a spinner worm harness here. What's your favorite for Glendo?
Well, I really like the slow presentations, especially, again, in that cold water. And I use a lot of Mylar blades that Max Lures produces. They're awesome as they spin slow at a slow speed. And also, they tend to ride up higher in the water column because they're so lightweight. A lot of metal blades, if you slow or get stalled with the wind, tend to sink rather rapidly, and you're always fighting snags. So anything you can do to keep that bait up off the water and out of rocks and debris is to your advantage.
Let's talk about the crankbaits. I have noticed this has become a real thing on the Columbia River, where folks are trolling these long, like 6-inch long crankbaits for walleye. What kind of crankbaits are you fishing at Glendo Reservoir?
Well, I try to certainly match the profile of the bait fish that are in particular bodies of water. Shad baits are always good. Small stick baits early in the spring, trolled again slowly because of the cold water. You know, you're running around 1.8 miles an hour is probably a pretty good speed to start with. And then you're just watching your graph to determine the depth that those fish are at. If they're hugging the bottom, you know, you've got to slow down because they're just inactive. But if they're up off the bottom a little bit and you can get that bait down, depending on your depth, whether it's with lead core or some kind of weighted line, then you're in business and stuff. But typically, that's the speed that you want to run, or I try to run anyway, in the springtime with water in the, you know, high 40s to low 50s.
All right, let's head to Central Wyoming, Boisen Reservoir. This is one I know you've fished before. It's one of your favorites. Tell our listeners why it's so good for walleye.
Well, in the springtime in Boisen, they tend to move towards the rocky shorelines and stuff, and you're going to find even the males will be hanging around a lot longer than the females after the spawn into those rocks and stuff. So pitching any kind of plastics or any kind of a crayfish imitation, Boisen has a high population of crayfish, and I think it's more of a food source for the walleyes than people realize and stuff. So, even if it's a crankbait, crayfish imitation, it's going to be bouncing off the rocks as you cast into a shoreline and stuff, I think is a good place to start.
Does Boisen have smallmouth bass? Because if it does, it sounds like this is the perfect recipe to catch both walleye and smallmouth there.
I've never caught a smallmouth bass out of Boisen. They have a satellite lake that they've actually stocked at largemouth, which is real close to the Boisen Reservoir and stuff, and I know there's a lot of bass fishermen that target that. Boisen has a great trout population. They've stocked a lot of big trout, and the sauger are actually coming back into Boisen pretty well. So you've got some certainly options, and they also have a large number of crappie and perch, and the crappie are really nice. I've caught those trolling cranks throughout the summer months, and they're a lot of fun.
Sounds like I need to make a trip to Boisen Reservoir. What other place the Wyoming Walleye Stampede will be stopping at this year is Pathfinder Reservoir between Casper and Rollins. Not familiar with this body of water at all. Tell our listeners about this place.
Well, Pathfinder and Alcova are, I think, part of the North Platte system, and one of the most beautiful places you can go as far as boating and seeing the canyon walls and the Prairie Reservoir and stuff. It is a great place. Fish some tournaments down there, fish the Wyoming Walleye Stampede Championship down there a couple years. And last year in 2017, I think my partner and I took fifth place. So at that time it was later in the summer, it was August, and we were primarily pulling bottom bouncers and crawler harnesses and leeches, and any of those standard techniques for walleyes are going to be a go-to. I mean, again, focus on the water temperature. If it's in those low 50s and you're talking about trying to come with some kind of a slower presentation, they're, you know, coming off a spawn and they're a little sluggish yet, but when they put on the feed bag, boy, going up shallow in that warmer water, which draws the bait fish, is where I would head.
Pat, what's the next tournament you're going to be fishing this year?
Right now, John, we're scheduled to fish Crooked Creek Tournament, which is part of the Montana Walleye Circuit out on Fort Peck. We're just kind of watching the water levels on Fort Peck to see what's going to happen. It's pretty low right now because of the drawdown, but that's where we're scheduled. And then multiple tournaments in July, again in Montana, because I'm right on the border and that's where my partner is out of. So we fish up there. And then the Gov Cup, Montana Governor's Cup on Fort Peck in July. It's a monster tournament, 200 teams, and we're excited about that one.
Well, I will be rooting for you for the Governor's Cup and for those other tournaments, too. Hope you cash in some nice checks. Hope you bring home a trophy. And thank you so much for sharing your expertise with our listeners today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
John, it's my pleasure. Anytime, I love talking fishing with you. Have a great day.
I'm the best jigger around. I'm on a jig me up a walleye right now.
Located in the northeast corner of Oregon, Wallowa County offers a unique destination rich in natural beauty and outdoors recreation. Enjoy the clear waters of Wallowa Lake. Take a tram to the top of Mount Howard for million-dollar views. Hike or ride into the Eagle Cap Wilderness and fish or raft the Wallowa and Grand Ronde Rivers. It's all waiting for you in beautiful Wallowa County. Plan your visit today at WallowaCountyChamber.com. That's WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Go fishing, make money, help out, and have fun.
That's what the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery is all about. From May 1st through September 30th, catch pike minnow out of the Columbia and Snake Rivers and turn them in for cash. Pike minnow eat juvenile salmon and steelhead. Each one you catch helps more juvenile fish reach the ocean. Pike minnow are worth anywhere from $5 to $8, and keep an eye out for tagged fish worth $500. Find out more at pikeminnow.org and go fishing.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand public access to the outdoors. Our outdoor heritage depends on sportsmen and women like you speaking up for the natural resources that sustain our way of life. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org and become a BHA member today.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Hurry, though. If you wait too long, the big opportunity might get away.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has what you need as a hunter, angler, hiker, paddler, camper, and outdoors enthusiast. They also carry an extensive assortment of firearms and ammunition you simply can't find anymore at many big box stores. On top of that, their knowledgeable staff is here to help you purchase the right gear so you can get the most out of your outdoor experience. Visit your local Sportsman's Warehouse store today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com.
We've got time for one more shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
I am so glad you're back, because it's that time again.
It's record fish time.
This one comes out of the South Fork of the Clearwater River in Idaho, and if you're an angler, you know that means we're talking about a record steelhead. The angler who caught and released this fish is Scott Turner. He hails from Boise. He's an avid angler who has several records in the books and who previously held the honor of having the biggest catch and release steelhead in 2017 until that record was broken. Well, now he can reclaim it. He caught this 39-plus-inch fish on April 11th, and if you're wondering how rare a big steelhead like this is, here's a factoid from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, which reports that of the 225,000 steelhead they've trapped and measured at Lower Granite Dam on the Snake River over the years, steelhead over 35 inches only make up 0.9% of the run. As for beating this record, it can be done, but it won't be easy. There are only a half a dozen steelhead 40 inches or more crossing Lower Granite Dam in any given year. If you want to give it a go, though, you've got until April 30th to fish the Clearwater this year. Until then, though, Scott,
congratulations on your new record.
And now it's time for your Sportsman's Warehouse Trivia Question of the Week. And it's all about 29-year-old Brandon Polinuk. He's one of the best bass anglers in the entire world. He won the Bassmaster Elite Series last year, and he's earned over $1.3 million tournament dollars so far as a pro over the last 10 years. Despite his success, Brandon is really a nice down-to-earth person. We actually have had a chance to have him on the show, and you know what? He hails from right here in the Northwest. Here's your question. What Northwestern state did he grow up in and learn to be a bass fisherman? Is it Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, or Wyoming? If you think you know, just go to our Northwestern Outdoors Radio Facebook page. If you haven't already, please like and follow that page, and then look for the post thread where we have the question. Give us your answer there. If you don't do Facebook, just go to our newly revamped website at northwesternoutdoors.com. Scroll down to the section where you can shoot us an email and let us know again. What Northwestern state did Bassmaster Pro Brandon Polinuk grow up in and kind of learn how to be a bass angler along the way? One lucky person who guesses right will win that $25 gift card we give away every week from Sportsman's Warehouse, which has plenty of bass fishing gear in case you want to hit a lake or river near you and tangle with a largemouth or smallmouth bass. We'll wrap things up in the same way we did at the beginning of the show. Again, there is so much to do at this time of year. Whether you like to hike, whether you like to bike, whether you like to check out the wildlife, go fishing, go hunting for turkey, go hunting for spring bear, it's all available to you right now. And I hope in the days ahead, you'll take advantage of some of these opportunities and get out there and do something outside. Until next time, do take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.